This is Classic Rain 3. I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR. Let's launch this Classic Rain report. Here in Classic Rain 3, you'll hear a special report that was filed by 220 Notes newsletter editor Art Reese, K9XI, that will bring back painful memories to our longtime 220 enthusiasts, and we'll hear some tips on good repeater operating practices that are just as valid today as they were when these were voiced 30 years ago. In 1985, a Chicago-area repeater known as the Bear, the broadcast employee's amateur repeater, became Chicago's most listened-to machine Wednesday nights with its weekly Bear Information Service, coordinated by Hap Holly, KC9RP. A major contributor to the BIS was Art Reese, K9XI, a driving force nationwide in the 220 community. In the 80s, the future of the 220 to 225 MHz amateur band was in serious jeopardy. UPS, the United Parcel Service, was seeking a continuous band of frequencies for its untested ACSB, Amplitude Compandered Sideband Technology. Here's a report written and voiced by Art about the related congressional hearing on the FCC in Docket 8714 that would reallocate 220 to 222 MHz from the U.S. 220 MHz band for what eventually would become Abandoned Spectrum by UPS.
Hi, I'm Art Reese, K9XI, editor of 220 Notes newsletter, with a special report. Congressional hearings on the FCC and Docket 8714. Thursday, May 11, 1989. The first congressional hearings involving the FCC's handling of the matter of Docket 8714 was held before the House Subcommittee on Government Information, Justice, and Agriculture, chaired by Representative Robert Wise of West Virginia. This set of hearings was part of an umbrella of many hearings strung together, covering problems brought to the attention of Congress involving various government agencies. The FCC itself was to be brought into hearings covering several matters, of which the Docket 8714 situation was just one. ARRL lobbyists had arranged for this matter to be brought up after spotting notices in congressional papers. There is one hitch, and it was an important one. The list of witnesses for the amateur radio side was dictated by the subcommittee staff. Ross Merlin, WA2WDT, is a federal government worker who attended the hearings, and he provided the lineup.
The ARRL team consisted of Carl Thompson, section manager from West Virginia, Dave Sumner, executive vice president at ARRL, and Richard Rudman, chief engineer, KFWB Radio, Hollywood, California.
Chris Imlay, N3AKD, is the attorney for the ARRL. Chris told 220 Notes that subcommittee chairman Wise was totally sympathetic to the cause of amateur radio, his late father having been licensed for over two decades as WA8AYP.
Wise was absolutely sympathetic. He mentioned early on in his opening statement going up on the hill and operating outdoors for emergency preparedness with his father. And, you know, he's talking about field day. He referred to the president talks glowingly of 1,000 points of light, and here we are trying to take away from that.
But not all of the representatives present were friends of amateur radio. Again, Chris Imlay.
We had a couple of really aggressive, unpleasant congressmen. We had one who was totally dedicated to our cause. Fortunately, the one who's dedicated to our cause happened to be the chairman of the committee.
Who's against us?
McCandless and English.
McCandless,
This is from Palm Springs, basically the Riverside County area of California.
The other anti-amateur congressman was Glenn English of Oklahoma. If you're listening to this and you're from either area, the Riverside area of California, or from the Oklahoma area, you might want to drop your congressman, or Mr. English, or Mr. McCandless, a line telling them your feelings. For the most part, the witnesses for the ARRL were okay, but the real star of the show for the amateur radio side was the witness for the Department of Defense and the National Communications System, Dr. Dennis Bodson. Ross Merlin, WA2WDT, relates.
Dr. Bodson's testimony was exceptional. It was wonderful. He was just terrific in his presentation. Extremely knowledgeable, extremely well-versed in the various aspects. And since he was representing DOD and NCS, it was very, very credible, very valuable evidence. Unfortunately, by the time he was on, it was down to only the two principal members of the subcommittee.
Christopher Imlay comments.
Dennis Bodson was just terrific, and he waved around a memorandum of understanding between the ARL and the National Communications System, which the FCC had claimed it didn't think existed. He shows up and says, here it is, and that the FCC knew about it.
The United Parcel Service was also there to testify. Under questioning, the witness for UPS, a Mr. Hughes, admitted that it didn't make too much difference to UPS where their new ACSB system went, as long as they had one contiguous frequency band, and that at the present state of their project, it would cost them absolutely nothing to move. That was a most telling point in our favor. But when it came to the FCC's witnesses, Dr. Tom Stanley and Julian Knapp of the OET, things began to get very interesting. Numerous violations of the Procedures Act turned up. Listen to Ross Merlin tell of one such exchange.
There was stuff about the reply comments and the short deadline and all that. And Mr. Stanley mentioned, well, we accepted every comment we received. We did not reject one single comment, even if it was after the filing deadline. And something was said about, well, how are we supposed to know that you were accepting comments after the deadline? Well, obviously they knew because we had comments from about 12 amateurs. You know, the rules say no more comments after such and such a date. A dozen people happened to send comments in and they happened to be accepted, so the rest of us are supposed to somehow magically know that it's okay to ignore the rules and send the comments in late. It was just a ludicrous statement on his part, and it
I cannot believe the depth of the lack of knowledge of how to regulate I'm hearing here.
You'll go wild when you get a hold of the transcripts, but that might not be for 3 to 6 months.
An even more telling exchange is remembered by Chris Imlay.
But so anyway, Wise says, well, look, you know, you've proposed to relegate these amateurs to a 3 megahertz reservation up here where they had 5 before. He said, yeah, but that was a secondary allocation. And Wise says, well, yeah, but I mean, isn't it true that they had a de facto primary allocation because the government radio location wasn't using it very extensively? And Stanley said, yeah, that's right. And Wise said, so isn't it really true then that you can understand why the amateurs are upset? Stanley said, yeah, I can understand it. They're going from 5 megahertz to 3 megahertz. I can fully understand why they feel that way. And Wise said, and you could take those 3 megahertz away from them tomorrow, couldn't you? And Stanley said, well, I'd give the amateurs a high degree of assurance that they'd never have to move from there. And Wise said, just like we told the Indians that, right? They'd never have to move from the reservation.
You're listening to a special report about a 1989 congressional hearing regarding the FCC's arbitrary reallocation of the bottom 2 megahertz from the 220 U.S. amateur band to the United Parcel Service, UPS. We'll conclude this report written and voiced by 220 Notes editor Art Reese, K9XI, for the Bear Information Service after this break for station ID. This is Classic Rain number 3. I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR.
You're listening to Classic Rain from www.therainreport.com.
Ross Merlin again.
There are all sorts of really fascinating questions and answers, like when the FCC guy referred to, well, moving the control links from 220 down to the other control links on the 148 megahertz band.
There aren't any.
Yeah, you and I know that. The FCC guys were a little confused about reality.
Oh, you're kidding.
Well, they're not him. They don't know this technology, and they're trying to regulate this technology from quite a distance. You just can't do it with technical things.
And another one, this time from Chris Imlay.
Wise asked Tom Stanley, you know, what monitoring studies did you do? You know, well, they didn't do any. They relied solely on the repeater directory. But that repeater directory isn't a listing of anything but repeaters, right? He said, right. But he said, but we're not dealing with real people here. This is the only listing of facilities that we had. Talk about an inflammatory remark.
All was not peaches and cream with the amateur side, as you might guess. Both Chris Imlay and Ross Merlin had a few thoughts on this. We have time, however, only for Ross's.
I don't know all the rules on how to impress your congressman, but I think if we had hit them both barrels loaded with Administrative Procedures and Regulatory Flexibility Act information, and then have that backed up by the broader concerns expressed by Dr. Bodson, the FCC did not adequately consider the Defense Department's objections in this proceeding, I think that would have been a powerful presentation because it's within the purview of what Congress can do.
It will be a while before the outcome of these hearings is known. Already there are rumors that the Senate may be interested in holding hearings of their own on the 8714 issue. The record is still open in the House Subcommittee for input from amateurs who have relevant comments to add. I personally am adding my own. The biggest thing that you can do is to write your congressperson and ask them to support these hearings. There are other outcomes as well. During the hearings, Tom Stanley let it be known at least one important bit of information. Chris Imlay.
Stanley testified that they were going to complete their consideration of the reconsideration petition either by the end of this month or into June. So it's coming right up. That's true. That means it's bad. Except that I think they got a little scared after the hearing.
A lot of very knowledgeable and important people, both in government and in this hobby, thought that we'd never see the day when Congress would investigate the Docket 8714 mess. This time, the news is for them. It may not have been perfectly done either, but it was a start. And from here, we need to keep pushing Congress until right and justice prevails in the Docket 8714 case. Our thanks to Ross Merlin, WA2WDT, and to Chris Imlay, N3AKD. This has been a special report. Congressional hearings on the FCC and Docket 8714. For the Bear Information Service, I'm Art Reese, K9XI in Chicago.
One of the fine reports written and voiced by 220 note editor Art Reese, K9XI, for the Bear Information Service in the spring of 1989. Up next, some tips on good repeater etiquette, written and voiced 30 years ago by Nina Molina, KA9WJZ.
When VHF repeaters were first constructed about 30 years ago, our amateur radio forefathers realized that a set of ground rules would have to be established in order for this new technology to operate smoothly and successfully. But as time went on, new hams joined the hobby as well as the repeaters, and there was always the possibility that these new hams were derived of learning the ground rules. Plus, as the old saying goes, old habits die hard. With this in mind, let's take a look at some important repeater ground rules in this month's edition of On the Air Tips. Number one, listen first. Never turn on your radio and just start talking. There might be a conversation in progress, and you'll be the one who'll look like the fool. Number two, keep your calls short. This is especially true during rush hour periods. Many people want to use the system, so if it's possible, QSY off to a simplex frequency. Number three, pause between transmissions. This one can really be a problem with some people, despite modern repeater technology. Many forget that the repeater's courtesy beep is there to make you pause for any breaking stations as well as to reset the machine. If you're operating on a system that has no beep, make it a practice to either let the repeater drop or wait about 3 seconds or so in between transmissions. Number four, allow breaking station immediate access. It should be crystal clear without any explanation, but many people seem to abuse this rule. When a station breaks in or signs his call, turn it over to him immediately. Don't just put him into the rotation. You never know what his traffic is. Enough said? Don't over-identify. This one is a personal pet peeve of a lot of people. A bad example is the hams that identify after every transmission. FCC rules mandate after every 10 minutes. Also, there's no need to say, "This is K9XYZ for ID." Why else would you be giving your call? Roundtable discussions. Make sure not to leave anyone out of the roundtable. This is called the repeater shuffle. Also, make sure to give the name or call sign of the person you're passing it over to. This will avoid doubling and long periods of silence. Probably the most important tip of all, please be sure to practice courtesy and consideration. Remember that amateur radio is a hobby and a privilege. If you do something considerate for someone else, they'll more than likely reciprocate. Also, keep in mind that if we all remember to try to pause a few seconds in between transmissions and suppress the urge to over-ID, we can make a good repeater even better. With On the Air Tips, I'm Nina Molina, K9WJZ.
And that's it for Classic Rain number 3. The Classic Rain episodes are updated biweekly on therainreport.com and can be transmitted over amateur radio in its entirety. Once these episodes are uploaded to therainreport.com, they'll remain on the opening screen until the next upload, scheduled for September 13th. Classic Rain is copyright When Dinosaurs Ruled the Earth, or 1989, whichever is later, to 2019 Rain. All rights reserved. I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR. Keep on hamming.